And obviously, I'll give the disclaimer that this is in no way comprehensive, you know, that we're just going to touch on six basic ideas related to the ideas of chumras, and we're not really going to properly explain any of them. You know, I just want to give a bunch of examples and, you know, throw out some concepts for you to think about. But, you know, obviously every single one of these types of inyanim requires a she'elas chacham, and, you know, also requires you to use your own seichel. And you have to, that's the number one rule when it comes to these types of topics, is everything has to be done with seichel. Everything has to be done, you know, in a well thought out, comprehensive, sensitive type of way. Okay, so in terms of the idea of chumras, the idea of taking on chumras, I'll just tell you, I was at a wedding two nights ago, and it was the first guy in his grade to get married. It was a guy 2 years removed from high school. So everybody was very young. It was, you know, everybody shows up to such a wedding. You know, you could come from halfway across the world. If your first friend getting married, so everybody goes. So there were probably, after the chuppah was over, probably, you know, immediately upon the conclusion of the chuppah, there were probably five Ma'ariv Minyanim. Now, that happened at about 7:30, right? So Tzeis HaKochavim was probably at about 8:05, something like that. No, I'm way off on that. I'm not sure. Whatever time Tzeis HaKochavim was, I'm not sure. But so everybody had their minyanim from Ma'ariv right away, and so some of us wanted to wait until Tzeis HaKochavim for whatever reason. It's perhaps a better time to daven Ma'ariv after Tzeis HaKochavim. You know, so I was looking around for some of my students that I could grab together for a minyan. So I mentioned to one of them, I said, listen, all you guys are just back from Shana Bet. Just tell them there's a chumrah that you're supposed to dafka daven after this such and such a time, and everybody will come running. You know, I said, and like guys will be mafsik in the middle of Shemon Esrei, you know, if they're already davening because they heard there's a chumrah to daven a little bit later, it doesn't matter. I said, so one of the guy I asked, he was 100% maskim. He's like, yeah, I'm that guy. So he, you know, so the phrase I once heard said over was, you know, the B'nai Torah are machmirim b'nei machmirim. They, you know, it's a play on words from the Chazal saying Klal Yisrael are ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim. So b'nei yeshiva, you know, are machmirim b'nei machmirim. They love chumras, and they think that, you know, that there's something to always trying to be as machmir as possible. So I'm not here to argue on that. I'm not here to say that that's not true. I just wanted to give some basic guidelines as to what I think are important things to keep in mind in Yanei Chumras. So I selected just some things that popped into my head in terms of some of the examples that I'm going to give. I'm sure you'll be able to come up with just as many good examples for yourself, you know, but I just felt in order to beef up some of the Torah content in this year, so I just give a number of examples. The first rule, which is the most important rule when dealing with Chumras, is that every single chumrah cannot, you know, I can, it's hard to think of any exception to the rule, but every single time a person is machmir, there's always a chashash, that is what we call a chumrah haba'ali de kula, which means that you think you're being machmir in this particular area, but you're perhaps being makel on something else, or maybe this area itself. We'll see that takes two basic forms. The first form is in the halachic area, in areas of din, it's very easy to wind up trying to be machmir and in the end being makel on a different halacha or the same halacha. So I want to give some examples of that, and that's really the number one thing to look out for when you're being machmir. So if you look in source number one, the Shulchan Aruch in Orachayim Tafrei Shlamites paskins that if it's raining into one sukkah, and person goes into the house, so the question is, do you have to go back out to the sukkah, or do you stay in the sukkah for the duration? So this is the Shulchan Aruch basically says, if the rain stops, ein matrichin oso lachzor l'sukkah kol osa halayla. We don't force somebody to go back into the sukkah after the rain stops. Aval yoshin beveso ad shiyala amud hashachar. He should sleep in his house, finish out the night, until the next morning, right? And then he should wake up and go about his day, right? And then it continues. says, Misha haya yoshin besukkah v'yardu gishamim. Let's say you were already sleeping in the sukkah and it started raining. Ein tzarech l'sha'er b'kadesh yiskalkal atavshil. D'b'gishamim u'atim have a tzara lishon sham v'yuchal latzis. So somebody's going to say, well, I know the Gemara in Sukkah tells me how much rain has to be falling in order for me to leave the Sukkah. So it has to be enough that the rain is dripping into my soup or the rain is dripping onto my plate and all my food is getting ruined. Most people, when they eat food, it's not like a side of water on the plate, and therefore it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really taste very good after a while. So the halacha is, when you're in the sukkah and it starts raining, you can leave when the food starts getting ruined. But so if you're sleeping and you feel drops on your head, so you don't have to cheshbon, well, you know, it's pretty much not raining hard enough that I would have to leave the sukkah if I was eating, so I should probably just go back to sleep or try to go back to sleep in the sukkah. There's no such cheshbon, because for different activities, there's different amounts of rain that ruins the thing. So when it comes to sleeping, the fact that you're up noticing that it's raining is a raya that the rain interrupts your sleep. And therefore, even a small amount of rain is enough that a person should leave the sukkah. Okay, that's just a stam halacha. And then the famous line in the Shulchan Aruch, v'chol ha-pater min ha-sukkah ve'eino yotze misham, anyone who is pater from the sukkah and does not leave, eino mekabel of schar, he doesn't get reward, ve'eino ela hedyotos, and he's in a hedyot. Those who are not aware, hedyot is, I don't think it's a regular Hebrew word. I think it comes from a Greek word, which is the predecessor or the antecedent, I don't know how you use the term, the father of the modern word idiot. Hedyot and idiot are very much related. But it means a commoner. He's a commoner. He's not doing anything special. And basically the Shulchan Aruch is telling you that there's no inyan whatsoever to sit in the sukkah and say, listen, I know I'm pater from the sukkah when it started raining, but at the end of the day, I'd much rather sit in the sukkah and be mekayim my mitzvah in the rain than going inside. So this is a big question, why it is that there's no inyan to sit in the sukkah even while it's raining. The Mishnah Brura in the Bir Alacha over here at Divrei Maaseh V'Chol HaPater has an interesting explanation, which is not necessarily the only pshat in this idea, but just for our purposes, it's very helpful. Right, so he says, "V'chol ha'potter min ha'sukkah v'chulei ze'aklal hu dafka b'makom she'yesh bo tzad isur." This idea is when there is an isur involved. Kimo b'mitztayer dahave chilul yontif. So he says, "What you really are going to be machmir and sitting in the sukkah? That's very nice, but you're being makil in something else. You're going to violate an isur of being mitzayer yourself on yontif." And you're not allowed to do that. V'afilu b'chol ha'moed, chayiv l'chabdo. Even on chol ha'moed, there is a chiyuv kavod, and there is a chiyuv to try to be as happy and have as much enjoyment as possible on chol ha'moed. So one has no right to get soaking wet and cold and uncomfortable in the sukkah in order to be mekayim the mitzvah of sukkah. Right? So he says, however, avlim eino mitzar, but if the person is not in a situation of tsa'ar rashoy lahachmir, kamor rabban gamlil, shehechmir alatzma bidli shamayim, v'amar he'elum l'sukkah. So he says, if you want to be machmir in a case where you're not mitzar, but you are parted from the sukkah, of course you are permitted to be machmir, as there's a Mishnah which says that someone brought rabban gamlil some water, and he said, I'll take the water in the sukkah, please. He dafka wanted to drink water in the sukkah, and the Rambam paskins this lahalacha, that one who wants to be machmir and to dafka have every single food item over the course of the entire yontif in the sukkah, including water, has the right to be machmir as such. But not in a situation of tsar. If the person is mitztayer and they stay in the sukkah, then they are considered a hedyot. They are considered to be doing nothing special, and as the way the Mishnah Berurah seems to put it, you're actually doing something wrong by staying in the sukkah because you're being mechalal yontif. So this is an example of a chumra bali de kula. That on one hand, you think you're being machmir in the halachas of sukkah, you're going to be extra frum when it comes to staying in the sukkah, but you wind up being less frum when it comes to violating kavod and oneg yantif. Okay, that's example number one. Example number two is more relevant to women. It's the issue of women wearing tefillin, and men wearing tefillin to a certain extent. If you take a look in source number three, Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Nashim va'avadim pturim mitfillin, mipnei shu mitzvah saseh shezman grama, right? Pashit. It's a regular mitzvah saseh shezman grama, and like many mitzvah saseh shezman grama, women are pater, right? There are almost as many exceptions, if not more exceptions to the rule than there is the rule. Happens to be. Women are chayiv in many, many mitzvah saseh shezman grama. But at the end of the day, the rule still is that women are pater from mitzvah saseh shezman grama. So therefore, women are pater from wearing tefillin. And then the Ramah adds on, v'manashim rotzin lahachmir al atzman mochin biyodan. Quotes from the Kolbo, one of the Rishonim, that if a woman wants to be machmir and wear tefillin, one should protest against her wearing tefillin. One should say that she is not permitted to be machmir. Now we just got done talking about the halachas of sukkah. If a woman wants to be machmir and sit in the sukkah, so is she allowed to be? Yeah, of course. Not while it's raining. But if it's not raining and a person is enjoying being in the sukkah, then for sure a woman has the right to be machmir. And women from Ashkenazic backgrounds can even make a bracha in the sukkah. Women from Sephardic backgrounds do not make a bracha on mitzvah saseh shezman grama that they volunteer. Same thing for shofar. Already for shofar, the minig is that women are a little bit chayiv in it because they already were makabel for many years already to try to be makayim the mitzvah shofar. Same thing for all kinds of mitzvahs. If women want to volunteer them, they have the right to do so. However, when it comes to tefillin, we don't allow it. So anybody know the reason for that? Yeah? Not exactly Kavachomer. You're 99% right. You're 99% right. I just say it over a little bit differently. Yeah? Yeah. Right, exactly. You hear how that follows through? Exactly. So there's a major downside. That's the idea. There's a major downside to wearing tefillin. One who puts on tefillin has the opportunity to violate a major isser of being mezalzel, of disgracing the covenant of the tefillin. And therefore, you could say, I'm going to go up to Shemayim, hopefully not for a while, and they're going to say to me, listen, you have X amount of averos of being mezalzel in the covenant of tefillin. So I'll at least have a counter argument. I'll say, listen, I understand. It's definitely my fault that I did the wrong thing, but what could I do? I had it tzivui every single day. I had to put on tefillin. So I only put on tefillin for a minimal amount of time. And I didn't even, there's a discussion whether or not to wear tefillin for mincha, maybe in addition to shacharis, but generally the world's minig is not to wear tefillin for mincha. So I was as makil as possible in keeping the mitzvah of tefillin. But what can I do? I had to put them on at some point. Mashenkin, a person who has no chiyuv to put them on, what's going to be the defense? The person has no right to risk being mezalzel in the covet of the tefillin in order to be mekayim this particular mitzvah. And therefore, this is another classic chumra habali de kula. If a woman wants to be machmir on herself, so she'll say, all right, I want to be especially frum, I want to be especially machmir. But on the other hand, there's a chashash iser, there's a chashash of coming to be mezalzel in the kavod of the tefillin. And therefore, we say to avoid it at all costs. And this is kind of what the Magen Avraham is saying in Sivkat and Gimel over there. And source number four. Okay, source number five, I want to change. This topic, the example I had for source number five, I'm not so into anymore. But I have a different example, which I'm not sure why I didn't bring it in the first place. I'm sure many of you have heard of the minhag not to eat meat after eating hard cheese. Right? Anybody ever heard of that?
Yeah.
Right. So there is such a minhag. And it's quoted in the Ramah in Yoredeya in Siman Pei Tes. And the Ramah writes that a person who eats what we would call hard cheese, I'm not sure exactly how to define hard cheese, the poskim aren't sure exactly how to define hard cheese, whatever it is, assumedly it means aged cheese. You know, many poskim talk about cheese that has been aged for 6 months. Some of the hashkach is actually put on the label if it's considered aged cheese or it's hard cheese. You'd have to ask your own rav in terms of what's worthwhile to wait 6 hours for after you eat it. So anyway, this is not mentioned anywhere in the Gemara, and it's mentioned in the Rishonim by the Marami Rutenberg. Marami Rutenberg once had an incident where he ate some hard cheese, and then he ate some meat afterwards, and then he noticed that there was still some cheese left in his mouth, and he was very upset. And he basically would always refrain from eating meat after he ate hard cheese for a lengthy period of time. So the Talmidim of the Marami Rutenberg, he was very, very influential in terms of the Psak Halach in Ashkenaz. His Talmidim, the Rush at the forefront of them and others, saw this. They saw that their Rebbe was Machmer for this, and it became somewhat of a mainstream Psak for Bnei Ashkenaz. And the Ramah quotes it in Shulchan Aruch. Now this is the way it came, the Chumrah came to be. Now, it's definitely not a din, it's definitely not the regular halacha. The regular halacha is paskin in the Gemara, that one who eats cheese and then wants to eat meat only has to have what we call kinuach v'adacha and perhaps netilas yadayim as well. Kinuach and adacha, you know what that is? Basically, you have to take, we're not particular about the order, you have to first rinse out your mouth and then chew on something which is not something sticky. Chew on a cracker or something to that effect, or some bread, and that's considered sufficient to clean out your mouth from the cheese, and then you can go and eat the meat, and then also it's perhaps very commendable, or even maybe required, to also wash your hands. Nowadays that we eat with cutlery, it's not so posh, but if you ate with your hands, then you should definitely wash your hands. And then you're really allowed to eat the meat. And that's what the Gemara says, and that's what the Rishonim say. Everybody besides the Marami Rutenberg, and even he's not necessarily poskening this for the masses, he mentioned this incident that came up, and it was recorded as a Maisa Shehaya. It wasn't necessarily recorded as a Psak Halacha. So the Maharshal, who is a contemporary of the Ramah, is very, very upset about this Chumrah. And the Taz, in the same spot in Yoredeya Siman Pei Tes, quotes this Marshal, and he says, this Chumrah is Minus. This Chumrah is Apikorsis. Why? Because you're not allowed to be frumer than the Gemara. If the Gemara says that this is something which is Mutter, you have no right to go ahead and say that this is Usser. The Marshal, Reb Shlomo Luria, he was a contemporary of the... He was an achron who didn't really realize he was an achron. He always takes on all the rishonim. He was alive in the times of Shulchan Aruch, and he was has a very, very harif methodology about him. He really he takes people on in very harsh terms. If you ever, examples of people who really get into their learning to the point that they, you know, say very tough things. The Marshal has, numerous examples of good lines, actually, that you can use to rank people out in learning. But nevertheless, he was very tough, and he didn't really realize he wasn't a Rishon. Because it was nobody ever gave a clap on the bima one day and say, okay, you're all Achronim now. Like, nobody really knew. Retrospectively, we look at them and we say, okay, the times of the Rishonim were already finished, and this is the beginning of the time of the Achronim. So he basically takes on a lot of the Rishonim from time to time, and he's a very tough cookie. The Marshal is, but he's in learning. He's as respected as anyone. So the Marshal in his Sefer Yamshel Shlomo on Maseches Chulin, he writes that this chumrah is not acceptable. You're not allowed to keep this chumrah. But and pretty much everything he says lahalacha in the Yamshel Shlomo is at least quoted in the Nosei Kelim on Shulchan Aruch and the Shach and the Taz. They don't always agree with him, but he's often quoted in the Nosei Kelim on Shulchan Aruch. And so the Taz quotes this Marshal. Ironically, the Marshal was a very big machmir. Marshal himself was extremely machmir, but in this particular case, he thought that there's no grounds for this chumrah at all. Yes?
But I don't understand. Aren't there times where the
Are there times that were stricter than the Gemara? Yes. So the question is, what is the context of that chumrah? Meaning, if the Gemara says, do this, right, this is the way you should do it. If you eat milk or eat dairy, you should then go ahead, wash out your mouth, chew on something, wash your hands, and then go eat meat. So the Gemara is telling you what to do. And you're going to come and say, no, that doesn't work for me. I'm much firmer than that. I'm actually going to wait 6 hours, and to say that that's something that's, you know, necessary or worthwhile, that's what he's saying you're not allowed, that's what you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to go against the Gemara telling you something is okay, and you then go ahead and do it, you know, say it's not okay. So you're basically trying to be firmer than the Tanaim and Amoraim, which is not okay. That's the idea. Yeah. No, so if you're not hungry and you don't want to have anything, or if you can, what?
It's not like you're doing the action, you're waiting.
It's a big deal because you're doing it for a reason. Meaning to not do something for a reason is also an inyan, saying to avoid eating meat for the next 6 hours, not because you're doing it in an inconspicuous way. You're writing in the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah's writing in the Shulchan Aruch, that this is something that's worthwhile to avoid. And basically, he's paskening in a more machmir way than the Gemara. So that's what the Marshal is all upset about. Okay, so why is this not such a problem? Why is the Ramah allowed to do this? And why, you know, more importantly, why is the Ramah not an apikoros? The simple answer is that if you look in the Gemara in Chulin, this is not my answer, the Vilna Gaon has this, but a lot of Achronim have this explanation. If you look in the Gemara in Chulin on Kuf Hei Amid Aleph, the source for our entire idea of waiting between milk and meat is a statement of Mar Ukva. Mar Ukva, sort of in a backhanded way, explains the idea of waiting. He says that, Mar Ukva says that, compared to my father, I am like vinegar, the son of wine. My father was like wine, and I'm like vinegar. Why was my father so much better than I am? Because when my father would eat meat, he would wait for an entire day before he ate dairy the next day. He would wait 24 hours. He says, I only wait till the next su'uda. I only wait, bein su'uda l'su'uda. I only wait till what they call su'uda achrita. That my next meal, I'm already eating dairy again. So Mar Ukva is saying that I wait from meal to meal, but my father used to wait an entire day. And apparently that's much better. Right? So, and that's why the whole hak about how long to wait comes from. Because the Gemara only says you wait from one meal to the next. It doesn't give any numbers in terms of time. So that's why Tosfos Paskins, all you need to do is bench, and then you're good. All you need to have is a benching, and then you're allowed to eat dairy right after your meat meal is over. And Meikar Adin, that's really the Psak Halacha for B'nai Ashkenaz. The Ramah says you should wait an hour, right? I think some people still do that. I think Dutch people still do that, right? So Ramah says you should wait an hour. But in the end, the Mechaber Paskins like the Rambam and the Ramah and all the Nosei Kelim on Shulchan Aruch, Neshach, and the Taz all recommend waiting 6 hours. The way the Rambam says, it's just a question of whether or not we wait 6 hours as a chumrah, we wait 6 hours meikar adin. Sfaradim definitely wait 6 hours meikar adin, and Ashkenazim. So it depends if you accept the Ramah seems to be saying you wait 6 hours as a chumrah, but the Nosei Kelim like the Shach, quoting the Marshal and others, say you wait 6 hours meikar adin. But anyway, so what you see from that Gemara is that there is an inyan to be super machmir when it comes to waiting between meat and dairy. Right? Normally, you just pass it around. Okay. So really, there is clearly an inyan to be super machmir when it comes to waiting between milk and meat, and perhaps that's the impetus that motivated the Ramah to paskin like this chumrah, and like the Marshal says, that the Gemara already says that Mar Ukva was bemoaning his fate because he's not as machmir as his father who waited 6 hours. So that's why this is not a chumra habali de kula, the kula in this case being apikorsis, that a person is not saying that he's frumer than the Gemara, because Mar Ukva himself said, halavai, I wish I was frumer, I wish I waited longer. So apparently this opens the door for people introducing all kinds of chumras when it comes to waiting between milk and meat, and meat and milk, etc. Yeah. For his father.
Right.
Right.
So isn't that like...
That's clearly a chumrah because he himself didn't do it. That's the point. Meaning, he was saying that his father was super machmir in this area, and he doesn't have the koach to be so machmir. So he was a little upset at himself that he wasn't so machmir. What you see from here is that clearly the spirit of the Gemara is kol ha-machmir is a meshubach, that if you want to be extra machmir in this particular area of halacha, we're not only allowing for it, but we're encouraging it. We're saying that if you want to introduce new chumras to avoid eating milk and meat together, that's great.
So is there any idea of waiting a whole day because of that?
It hasn't really been accepted. Halacha l'maisa, there's no one who says you should do it, but again, technically speaking, if you take the words of the Gemara, then there is room for such a chumra. Meaning if you take the Vilna Gaon's suggestion that that's what motivated the Ramah to Paskin like the Marami Rutenberg, not to eat, you know, after hard cheese, so then technically you could take that to the next step and say there's also an Inyan not to wait a whole 24 hours. But I don't think there's anybody that's makbid for that. Certainly not in any of the poskim that you should do it. Okay. Yes?
The Inyan and the Gemara don't need to be anything from meat to milk.
Right.
So how can you just switch?
Right, maybe that's the Marshal's response. Right, that could be what the Marshal would respond. Then the Rama would just say that no, there's an inyan to be machmer in this area, in this particular halacha. I mean, there's no difference if you would eat cheese and meat together, if the meat would be on top or the cheese would be on top, or whichever one you put in your mouth first, that wouldn't make a difference, right? So it's the same thing that there's an inyan to be machmer to separate the two. That's the idea. Okay, that's another example, perhaps, of a chumrah that's possibly ba'ali de kula. Another one that's very famous, actually I'll say this one over first. This is a sensitive topic a little bit, but there's unfortunately many people in the world that have trouble having children. And there are procedures that people can undergo that are helpful. Some of these procedures involve possibly violating certain isurim to have some of these procedures done. So it's a question how quickly one is allowed to run to the doctor and have these procedures taken care of. So the Marsham has a psak that one should wait, and I think Rav Moshe says the same thing. You need another one? Oh, it's not there? Number six, source number six? I'm skipping number five. Number five was replaced where it says... Hilchos Chanukah and Tafrei Shayin Beis, I replaced it with Yoredei Simen Peites. Anyway. So there's an inyan that the Marsham and the Rav Moshe, I believe, holds the same way. It says that one should wait approximately 10 years without having children before they undergo some of these procedures because they do involve violating certain Isurim. And Rav Ovadia Yosef writes that he thinks that this is a classic Chumrah HaBa'ali De Kula. He thinks that that's a mistake. I mean, he's not halacha. I'm not saying this halacha l'maisa. I'm just saying that. So Rav Ovadia Yosef in the Abia Omer writes, "L'chora hi chumra bali de kula hoil ve'efsher sheishto tisaber v'teileid od kama pa'amim b'derech zu." Right. So he's saying that it's possible that using this method, some of the new scientific methods of having children, a woman could have multiple children via this procedure. And you're missing out on bringing out all these children into the world because you're being machmir to wait such a long time. So you think you're being machmir, like, let's keep trying normally to have children. And we'll keep, we'll avoid violating whatever isurim are involved. But at the end of the day, you might not have any children. You might succeed at the end of 10 years. But you could have had multiple children during that time period. And you're being So you think you're being machmir not to violate whatever yisurim are involved, but you're actually being mako by not bringing these children into the world during that time. So that's why it's a very iffy situation. It seems like a davar pashut on one hand to be machmir, but on the other hand, you know, you're losing out on this. There's a major downside to it. You know, this 10-year business also, just for the record, hopefully no one will ever know from such a thing, but 10 years bizman hazeh, in the age of instant everything, you know, so it's like 10 minutes. You know, for them waiting 10 years is like for us waiting 10 minutes. You know, it's not shaykh. For a person nowadays to wait 10 years, they live in a community where all their friends are having children and they don't have, you know, there's much, much more sense of impatience and much, much more agmas nefesh that's associated with childlessness than in the immediate future than people had in those days. So I'm not saying halacha l'maisa, you should definitely ask, you know, a shayla if it would ever come up, hopefully not for you. But if you ever hear such a thing, it's definitely worthwhile not to just say, oh yeah, the svarim say, wait 10 years. It's not so pashut at all, bizman hazeh, that people's sensitivities are much, much higher and people's patience level is much, much lower. You know, I always like to point out, when you read Shalos and Tshuvos, you know, so they asked a shayla, it went to one Rav, and this Rav eventually sent it to the Noda B'Yehuda, let's say. The Rav got the shayla, he didn't know the answer, he thought he knew the answer, but he wanted to get the Noda B'Yehuda to sign on. So they didn't even have what we call snail mail, right? They had, I don't know how letters got from point A to point B, but they did, right? So the question is always asked, like, what did they do in the meantime? What did they do while they were waiting for the tshuva? So Pasha says they just waited. They didn't do anything. Menogeh to this inyan, they just waited. Like we wouldn't function that way. Like, you know, if you can't make a cell phone call, so okay, so you don't have to make a cell phone call. You send a text message. You can't send a text message. Send an email. You know, and you can't wait till you get to your computer to get the email. Now you have to get it while you're on the move. Hopefully in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. So there's no concept of waiting for anything nowadays. So I'm not saying that we're better people for it. I'm just saying that in this area, the concept of waiting 10 years for anything, much less something so important, is not so poshut. Okay. Anyway, but that's another idea of a chumrah bali de kula. Maybe we'll do a couple more. So there's a very famous tshuva of the Chacham Tzvi, source number 7. The people who go, Americans who go to Eretz Yisrael for Yantif, so there's always a big hack about what to do. Nobody's really sure how many days of Yantif they should keep. So those who are makbid to keep one day of Yantif, it's seemingly against the Gemara. The Gemara seems to say that you should keep the chumras of the place from which you come. Very exciting here. It's a very exciting place to be. Okay, so the Gemara seems to indicate that one should definitely keep 2 days of Yantif, and that's the way the Shulchan Aruch, not the Shulchan Aruch, but the Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, has a Shalos and Tshuvos Sefer in which he was asked this Shaila, and he paskins that you should keep 2 days. And that would seem to be the Pashup Shat, if you learn the Gemara's, that it's pretty obvious you have to keep 2 days. However, the Chacham Tzvi points out that it's not as simple as one might think. He says that, I'm just going to summarize it, but you can take a look inside later. He says that the concept of keeping the chumras of the place from which you come only makes sense if there's no obvious downside to these chumras. Here, if you're in Eretz Yisrael and it's really a weekday, and you're going to be davening the Shabbos Shemoneh Esrei or the Yantav Shemoneh Esrei, and you're going to be laning and making all these extra brachos, all of those brachos are brachos levatala. And if you're going to be violating, and you're not, let's say you're going to say, I'm going to be machmer, I'm just not going to do malacha. So he says, that's still an isser of Baal Tosif. You're pretending it's yantif when it's not yantif. So he's saying, it's not so obvious that you have to keep the chumras of the place from which you come. Yeah, in New York, maybe it's second day yantif, but in Eretz Yisrael, it's not yantif in the place. And therefore, for you to keep those chumras would be an isser of Baal Tosif, of making an extra day of Yantif when there is none. So he's very harshly opposed to those who want to keep 2 days. This is basically the source of the controversy as to whether or not one should keep 1 or 2 days. But it's still the same idea of, well, why would you not keep 2 days? Just be machmir. Just keep the second day. What's the big deal? It's not going to hurt. So the answer is, it could hurt a lot. Could be a major chumrah ba'ali day kula, that if you end up making all those brachos and keeping the isur malacha, you could be making multiple, you could be violating multiple isurim of brachos levatala, of baltosif, etc. Okay, let's leave off the rest of the examples for now. Try to move on a little bit. You could look at the ideas. Some of them make more sense if you just read the sheet. Some of them I need to explain more. But anyway, that's the first type of chumrah ba'ali de kula in halacha itself. Meaning the halacha has chumras, the halacha has kulas, and you could wind up mixing the two when you're trying to be machmer, and you can wind up violating more, you know, being more lenient when you're actually trying to be machmer on the halacha itself. The second idea of chumrah ba'ali de kula is just in a person's hanhaga, just in the way a person acts. What do I mean by that? That for it could lead someone to a lax attitude towards actual halachos. It could lead someone to a lax attitude towards thinking that everything's a chumrah, and therefore nothing really needs to be kept. A couple of examples of this. If you take a look in source number 10, so the Gemara and Brachos, the Mishnah, the Gemara lists off the brachos in which a person is allowed to bow. Okay, so they list off Avos Tchila V'Sof, Hodah Tchila V'Sof, right? And Imba Lashuach V'Sof Kol Bracha U'Bracha U'V'Tchilas Kol Bracha U'Bracha Melamdin Oso Shalo Yishche. If the person wants to be Mosif, extra Hishtachavayos, the person wants to bow more times than is necessary, we tell them that they're not allowed to. We tell them not to do it. So Tosfos on that Gemara says, "Malam din oso shelo yishche v'im tomar v'yishche umabakach." What's the big deal? Anybody's getting hurt because the person's bowing? He wants to bow a few extra times during Shemoneh Esrei. What's the big deal? So Tosfos says, "V'yishlomar shelo yavol la'akor divrei chachamim," because we're afraid that the person will eventually uproot the words of the chachamim. Shelo yomru kol echad machmir kemoshu hu rotze. The ein kan takonas chachamim. Person will say, this whole bowing thing, it's just whatever anybody feels like doing. So this guy bows 15 times during Shemoneh Esrei, this guy bows 20 times during Shemoneh Esrei, so I'll bow no times during Shemoneh Esrei, I'm not so machmir, I'm not such a firm person, this person's much more firm than I am, so then I'll let him do all the bowing for me. Meaning if you start adding on more ishtachavayos, it blurs the line between what's actually necessary and what people are just adding on for themselves. And therefore, it's really going to cause more kulas in the sense of the attitude towards ishtachavaya. People will just think that the whole idea of ishtachavaya is just a chumrah ba'alma. It's just, you know, something that somebody came up with. And that's why you find different people bowing different numbers of times. And then they'll come to think that really I don't have to bow at all if I don't want to. If I don't want to be machmer, then there's no inyan to bow. And you'll wind up ruining the whole takanas chacham. That's the idea that Tosfos is explaining in the idea being Mosif Ishtachavayos. And we find this a lot of different cases. We find that sometimes you'll have a yeshiva guy will come back from Eretz Yisrael or wherever, or he learned in high school or elementary school, that the Rebbe said that the size for a kezias of matzah at the Seder night, this is approximately the size of this top of the shtender. You know, I don't know, about 2 feet by 2 feet. Of worth of matzah, and that's one kezias, and you originally need two kezesim, and you should try to swallow them both at one time, and you should, you know, and you have to eat 5 kezesim over the course of the Seder night. So the guy's going to be sitting there, and you know, his parents are passing around normal size kezesim of matzah, and he's going to say, like, well, I need quadruple that, you know, and that's just for the first kezias, and then, you know, so you're not going to see me for another 10 minutes. I'll be gagging, we'll talk later. So what happens then is the father, the mother, all the siblings, they look at this guy like he's from Mars. So what are you doing? Like, that's not what a kezias is. Last time I checked, the kezias was an olive, you know. And even if you want to say it's a big olive, which it's probably not, but even if you say it's a big olive, so okay, olives don't get to be this size, you know. They don't get to be this big. I was told, one of my rabbim told me, they asked Rav Soloveitchik, how big is a kezias of matzah? So he said, I'm not really sure, I don't know, but one shita in Rishonim is that a kezias is half of a kebetza. So it's the two kezesim in one egg. Another shita in Rishonim is that a kezias is one third of a kebetza, meaning there's three kezesim in one egg. And he said, and I know that elephants don't lay eggs. So it's an egg is an egg. It's not, we're not talking about ostrich eggs, we're not talking about elephant eggs. We're talking about half of an egg. That's mistama what a kezias is. Anyway, so what's going to happen? They're all looking at him like he's crazy. And I've seen this with my own eyes, and I've heard about it many more times than that, is that especially happens by the mothers and by the sisters, but even by the brothers, that they look and they're like, that's a kezias? I can't do that. So they take a nibble of matzah, and that's it. They were going to eat a kezias. They were going to eat a normal amount of matzah, which is required by the din. And they see this insane shear, and the person's telling them, this is a kezias. So they're like, if I'm not even going to wind up coming close to that, so just forget it. I'll take a crumb. I'll have one bite. And that's not okay. There's a mitzvah d'oraisa to eat matzah. So you wind up, that's a different type of chumra habali de kula. Like the type of mosif ishtachavayos. It leads people to blur the lines between chumras and meikar adin. And people just think the whole thing is nonsensical, the whole thing is a chumra. And therefore, I'll just do what normal people do, and that's not at all the halacha. There is a normal, basis in halacha for eating matzah, eating a certain amount of matzah, and one should not exceed that amount because of the fear of, causing those around them to be makel. Now again, it's understood. There's some times where the parents understand, yeah, this is my crazy son. This is my, whatever. He's the insane one in the family, and that doesn't affect anybody in any way. And sometimes it's all about the attitude with which we do things rather than what we do. If you present it as my way or the highway, that, listen, I'm going to do the right thing over here in my little corner of the table. You guys want to be wrong, whatever. just don't pour my wine because I'm afraid, it's going to be stam yenam if you guys pour wine for me because your kezias is not big enough. So I'm saying, it's not, if you give off that attitude, then it's going to cause major issues in terms of blurring the lines between everything. But if you just say yeah, I'm a meshuggah, I have a very big kezias, whatever, I'm crazy. You guys, you're normal people. I'm a crazy person, so I'll just do my crazy thing over here. It's a lot, and that doesn't really rub anybody the wrong way. If you jump in front of them and you call yourself crazy before they call you crazy, so sometimes that ends up diffusing a lot of the problem. Sometimes not. You have to know the situation. Yeah. Yes, we'll get to that soon, hopefully. So we'll hopefully get to that soon. But anyway, this is an issue of blurring of lines, that you really, people around you will not be Mekayim the mitzvah. And this also happens in terms of issues of tznius, when a person is mosif inyanim, a person is mosif chumras, when with inyani tznius also, it can cause people to blur the lines between what's required al pidin, and they'll start thinking that everything is a chumrah. If you're going to be mosif chumras in these areas, my wife once went to a shir by a certain rabbitson, and there was no clarity offered at the shir. There was no, it was just like, this is what it is, and I'm now going to list you 100 things that you have to do. And there was no understanding that this is Me'ikar Adin, this is a Chumrah, this area is subject to Machlokis, this is the way the Shulchan Aruch says, and this is the way some of the Achronim say. There was no clarity in terms of what was being offered. It was all offered as, if you want to be a Jewish person, this is what you need to do. And granted, some can argue that that's all people want. They don't want to be confused by the details. They just want to know what is the way it is. But Lemaisa, I guarantee you, based on the crowd to which this Rebbetzin was speaking, not one person was makabel any of her chumras. And because of that, not one person was makabel anything that she said. Because she just got up there and she said, this is the way it has to be. And not one person in the audience was doing it that way. And it just led everybody to basically come away with nothing. And said, this person's crazy. They have this alternative Torah. Apparently, when my Torah was being given, this person received a different Torah. And there's nothing, this person has nothing to offer me, when in fact, I'm sure that this person has a great deal to offer, and many, you know, many wonderful things that can be learned from. And it all just got lost because everything was thrown out, as a all the chumras were just thrown in people's faces, and it was just completely ignored. That's another version of a chumra habali de kula, that it's someone which leads to kulas in people's attitudes. It's something which people have to watch out for. Okay. Yes.
So, I mean, when it comes to being lawful, there's like a lot of different things that mind. So let's say there's a couple of minds you can find yourself. There's a basis for it. You're not going to make fun of it. There's not going to be any problems. There's no issue with humor. But there is like an issue against that, like, I guess you're influencing others, like, negatively. They see whatever you're being, like, not hearing.
Well, again, it depends, meaning people, if people decide to bang their own heads into the wall because you did something, that's not your fault, right? It's just a question of you have to use seichel and figure out what you're really going to cause to happen and what you're not going to cause to happen. So if you're going to keep a certain chumrah and it's going to directly, not indirectly, that somebody looks at you and says, ah, what a crazy person, and now I'm not eating kosher anymore, you know, so that's something, you know, that's their own fault. But if it's going to directly influence them, like I think the case at the Seder night is a good example of a direct influence on someone that it can really negatively impact when it was supposed to positively impact, you know. But I think in general, if a person is careful and sensitive, you can avoid this problem, you know. And if you make it clear, there's Ikar Adin and there's Chumrah, you know, this is a Chumrah. And I'm interested for whatever reason, we'll try to get to some of those reasons a little later, interested for whatever reason in taking on this chumrah, and you make it, and you explain it the right way, I don't think that'll negatively influence people. I think that it becomes a problem when you violate some of these other issues that I'm going to mention. I just want to get moving a little bit. That was basically issue number one, which is the main issue, which is the concept of chumrah habali de kula. And obviously many of these issues overlap, as you'll see. Issue number two is Chashash Bal Tosif, right? We mentioned that from the Chacham Tzvi, that he said that keeping the second day Yontif in Eretz Yisrael constitutes a Chashash Bal Tosif, right? So there are other issues about Tosif. I'm not going to read it inside, and it's a little complicated to read inside. The Rambam in source number 12 in Hilchos Mamrim Perek Beis Halacha Tes seems to indicate that if one presents a Din D'Rabbanan as if it is a din d'oraisa, then they violate an issur of Bal Tosif. Not everyone agrees to this, but the Rambam is very makbid that if you're keeping a din d'rabbanan, then it has to be very, very clear that this is not min haTorah. This is only a din d'rabbanan. And l'chora, this follows through into all areas of halacha. Person has to be very clear when they're keeping the Torah. So granted, every area of halacha constitutes the Torah. But it's important to know this is midaraisa, this is midrabanan, this is a minhag, and this is what we call a chumra ba'alma. This is something which is above the letter of the law, something to do with the spirit of the law. Right? It's very clear. If you want to be machmir like a certain shita of Tosfos, even though the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah paskin like the Ramban, so it's very important to know that this is a chumra ba'alma that's not paskin in Shulchan Aruch. It's mentioned, whatever, by some of the poskim. And you have to know that that's what's going on here. Nowadays, I heard from a certain, I never heard it from him, so I don't want to say it in his name, but one of the students of a certain famous Rosh Yeshiva once told me that he said that it used to be, back in the day, people were concerned with categories of halacha. There was deraisa, there was derabanan, there was minig. He says, now there's only two categories of rabbanan, of halacha. Mitzvah rabbah, and Yehurig Val Yaver. Those are the only two categories left. Either it's a mitzvah rabbah to do it, or it's Yehurig Val Yaver if you do it. Right? Those are the only two things left. It's not so. It's not true. That's what the Rambam is probably referring to as a chashash of Bal Tosif. That a person who calls everything Yehurig Val Yaver, calls everything such a big mitzvah, you know, that's a chashash of Bal Tosif. And that's something we take very, very seriously. So that's issue number two. You have to present things as they are. You have to be very clear on what's going on, what's the difference between all these things. Issue number three is that a person is being machmir has to be a level of tznius that's involved with one's chumras. There has to be a level of tznius involved with one's spiritual accomplishments, as in one's physical accomplishments. Right? There's really very little difference. Just as physically we ask people to try to be as private as possible, spiritually we should also ask people to try to be as private as possible. The Gemara in Bava Metzia on source number 13 on Chaf Gimel Amud Beis quotes the famous idea of three times when Talmidei Chachamim are allowed to change the truth. It says, "Dam Rabbi Yudam Shmuel, Bahani Tlas Mile Avide Rabbanan De Mishani Bimulayhu." In three areas, the rabbis change from the truth in what they say. B'Mesechta, Uvepuraya, and there's one more. Got cut off. Anybody know what it is? There's three things a Talmud Chacham was used to lie about. So the first one is Mesechta. When somebody asks you, "Do you know this Mesechta?" So you're allowed to say, "Nah, I don't know it so well," or "I don't know it at all." You know, if somebody wants to, just they're taking a poll, as we'll see in a second, right? Let's focus on the Pura Mesechta one for now. So the Mesechta means that if somebody asks you again, "Do you know this topic in learning?" Somebody comes over to you and say, "Ah, I hear you're a Bucky in Shas." So you can say, "I'm not a Bucky in Shas," even if you really are, right? So somebody wants to say, "I heard you know all of Shulchan Aruch." It's not true. You're allowed to say, "I don't know all of Shulchan Aruch," even if you really do know all of Shulchan Aruch. Right? So that's a little bit of contradictory to the Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanim v'shinantam, right, part of the mitzvah, v'shinantam levonecha, lashon shinun is a lashon of sharpness. It says, "Shehei divrei Torah mechudadim b'ficha." A person should be very sharp in their divrei Torah. They should know it right away. Shim yishal lecha adam davar al tegamgein v'tomar lo, elo emor lo miyad. Right? Somebody asks you a question in learning, don't hem and haw and fumble for the answer. Answer immediately. Right? So Tosfos, on source number 15, asks the question. He says, "Wait a minute, didn't we just say that if someone asks you a question in learning, you're allowed to pretend you don't know it? So how come it says here that you got to answer them immediately? Can't even hesitate." So Tosfos answers, there's a difference at the end of source number 15. So he says, "V'yesh lomar dahainu dafka ba'adam abo lishol din ohora o lehislamid." When a person comes to ask you a shaila, "Rabbi, I have a question, I need to know the answer," so then don't mess around. Answer right away. Aval hacha, but the Gemara b'Metzia, which is where the Tosfos is found, sheba l'nasoso im yodeya mutu l'shanos. Right? So a person wants to see if you know it, in which case it would be mutter to lie and to say that you don't know it. Veloma lo lamartizeh. You could say, "I never learned it." So if a person is just testing you to see what you know, so then there's an inyan to be as private as possible, and you don't have to say that you know it. You could say you don't know it. If a person wants to know the answer, they need your help, so you should give them help immediately. You shouldn't mess around. So that's the difference. But we see here an idea that there is, you should be a person even with Torah knowledge. Now every Jew, right, certainly every male is chayiv to know as much Torah as is physically possible over the course of his lifetime. Right? And certainly every Jew should know as much Torah as possible. So it's not a crazy idea to assume that someone should become a legitimate Talmud Chacham and really know their stuff. So how come if somebody comes over to you and says, "Do you know this?" you're allowed to lie and say, "No, I don't know it." Because, again, there's an inyan to be tsanua in one's spiritual accomplishments, in one's learning and mitzvos. One should try to be as private as possible. And so, kal v'chomer, when it comes to chumros, when it comes to additional levels of religiosity that a person takes on, there's really, tsanius has to be an important aspect that's observed over here. I'll just tell you two quick ideas. One is, Rav Shechter once told us that he was eating on Shabbos by Rav Binyamin Beinish Finkel, who was the Rosh Hashiva of the Mir. The current Rosh Hashiva of the Mir is his son-in-law. So Rav Beinish was having his Shabbos lunch, and Rav Shechter was coming. I think he was newly married. He came with his wife, and they came late. I don't know what happened, but he was late. So they had already washed, and they were eating. So Rav Beinish brought him two big challahs, like two normal-sized challahs. And he whispered into his ear, he said, "You can do whatever you want. I'm just letting you know that I'm machmer like the Gra." Which means that the Vilna Gaon has a shita that she's supposed to, at every meal, you should cut both challahs. You shouldn't just cut one of the two challahs. So he said, I'm machmer. I think he was just telling him, in case you shouldn't feel like you're wasting my food, if you want to cut both challahs, so it's not a problem. I do the same thing myself. You know? So Rav Shechter made hamotzi. He's also machmer like the Gros, so he cut both challahs. So one of the daughters, who was young at the time, you know, one of the young girls said, she started laughing. She said, why'd you cut both challahs? You're only two people. What do you need all that challah for? So Rav Shechter said, you see that he was tzanua. All of his kids always just assumed the reason he cut both challahs is because Baruch Hashem, he has a big family. They eat a lot of challah. But really, he was doing it because he was machmir to hold like the sheet of the Vilna Gaon. So, but the kids never picked up on it because he didn't advertise every single time he's going to be machmir about something that that this everybody needs to know. Rabbi Arya Yudin just told me a few minutes ago that his father tries not to carry with even in an Erev on Shabbos. So he said that when he was younger, his father, whatever sfarim he wanted to bring to shul, he would leave them on the ledge going outside, and the boys would pick them up and take them to shul. So he said he never figured out why. He said his brother had to tell him that it's because his father doesn't carry. He thought his father just wants him to have a chelik in his learning, that they should bring the sfarim. You know, maybe that's also true. But his brother said, nah, he says it's because he doesn't carry on Shabbos outside the house. So he never advertised, he never told him that that's the reason he doesn't do it. So there was, you know, it's very important in Inyan to be as private as possible when it comes to these things. Okay, do we have any more time or we have to go? You can tell me the truth. No one will tell me anything. What? Who's coming next? Oh, is it okay if I continue for a few more minutes, or I can leave? You don't have to. Okay, so we'll continue a little bit longer. Sorry. Just a couple more ideas. This issue number four is a person has to be careful that they're really worthy of keeping these chumras. Meaning it's not, they're not for everybody. Chumras are not for everybody. And you have to be very careful that you are in a position where this is something that meets the level of Avodas Hashem that you're at. What do I mean by that? Trying to cut down what I wanted to say. I'm trying to figure out which examples I should give. All right, I'll just give a couple of examples. Number one, we'll find many times in Shulchan Aruch, in later poskim mostly, on the Nosei Kelim and the Shulchan Aruch, and the Mishnah Berurah has this line a lot of times. They'll say, if a Baal Nefesh will be Machmer Al Atzmo. A Baal Nefesh will be Machmer Al Atzmo. Right? Which means that the Meikar Adin, it's permissible, but if you're a Baal Nefesh, you could be Machmer. So the question is, who's a Baal Nefesh? So I don't know, I'm sure you're aware that the Rosh Yeshiva, the founder of Yeshiva Har Etzion, Rav Amital, was just Nifter this summer. So I once heard in his name that he used to say that when we were in Yeshiva and we read this line, a Baal Nefesh will be Machmir, we thought it was talking about the Rosh Yeshiva and the Rebbe and all of our teachers. We didn't think it was talking about us. He says, now every Yeshiva Bachar who reads it thinks it's talking about him. Right? It's a difference in generations. It's a difference in terms of what people think of themselves. You know, I guarantee you that the B'nai Torah of today are not bigger Baalei Nefesh than they were a generation ago. You know, generally that's the Mahalach of Judaism. But nevertheless, it's a question of where you're really holding. You have to make sure that you're really a Baal Nefesh. You know, what do I mean by that? Perhaps, you know, if a person learned a sugya very well and they really know all the shittas in the Rishonim, and they have a lumdus in all the shittas of the Rishonim, and it makes sense to them. So, and then the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, like Tosfos, they're very into the shittas of Rambam. They had three shiurim in a row on explaining the shittas of Rambam. And then Lamaisa, the Ramah, accepts the position of Tosfos, not the Rambam. So it's mamish painful for them to go against the Rambam. They can't, they feel such a closeness, such a kinship to the shittas of Rambam, that it's hard to just blatantly violate the words of the Rambam like that. So then it's shayach for this person. He wants to be machmir also, if there is such a way to be mekayim both shitos. You know, if there's a way to do it, so then one should try to be machmir for both shitos. It makes a lot of sense in that situation because it means something to you. That's mamish where you're holding. That's who you are. You know, if you have nowadays they have books of hanhagas based brisk. There's like 50 different books because everyone else's book isn't authentic. So now the authentic Hanhagas-based brisk is going to come out. So they talk about all the briskarav chumras and all the different things that he would do. So why was the briskarav so machmir? Because he knew all the shitas in the Rishonim, and they were so meaningful to him, it was killing him. Like, how could I only do like Tosfos? How could I only do like the Rashba and ignore the Rambam and the Rith and the Raizid? How could I... It was killing him to know that he was going against these Rishonim. It was so hard for him to think that the Rambam was going to have tainas on him when he would go up to Shemayim, you know, that he didn't fulfill his shita in this particular area, you know. But we just buy the book on Hanhagas Beis Brisk and we just take on the chumrah. We don't even know the Rambam. We don't even know the Ravid shita. We just read in this particular book that was published last week that the briskarav used to be machmer like this. Also, we'll also be machmer like this. Say, it's not the same. That's not a meaningful chumrah. If you read a chumrah in a book, you know, that so-and-so, this gadol used to do this, that's not a meaningful chumrah for you. That's not the level that you're on. The chumrah for the briskarav was meaningful in the sense that was where he was holding, where it meant something to him not to violate this shita of the Rishon or the Achron, whatever. But that's it has to be real. You know, somebody once told me that he said he once read that the Chafetz Chaim used to keep a suitcase packed for when Mashiach came. So he says, so I also pack a suitcase for when Mashiach comes. So I didn't say anything to him at the time, but I'm like, the godless of the Chafetz Chaim wasn't that he knew how to pack a suitcase. The godless of the Chafetz Chaim was that Imamish held Mashiach could be coming at any second, and that's how he lived his life. Saying any moron could put some clothing in a suitcase and you know, kiss it goodbye and leave it in the closet. You know, for the Chafetz Chaim, at every turn he was hoping Mashiach's going to come. It was real to him. The suitcase wasn't just a bunch of clothes that was symbolic of something. He really meant to use it. Every day he woke up hoping this is the day that I'm going to get to use my suitcase. You know, it was meaningful to him. That was just, in other words, the chumrah that the Chafetz Chaim kept was the tzipia liyeshua, the fact that he was constantly longing for the geula. The suitcase was a natural offshoot of that, not the other way around. Not that he packed the suitcase because then hopefully, you know, he would want the Mashiach to come. So that's good when those types of things are good when it comes to Ikar ad-Din, but when it comes to chumras, they should be real. It shouldn't be something that is, you know. Okay, you get the point, I think. What else? Just a couple more points. This is a very important idea that if one wants to be machmer, they have to be very careful to be machmer on your own cheshbon. You can't be machmer on the cheshbon of other people. Just give a couple of examples. You know, you have a guy in the yeshiva and everybody's lining up or in camp. Guy's lining up to wash until he says, and this person has kol minei chumras in terms of every little aspect of how to wash until he dies. And they're all legitimate, right? The problem is, there's 30 people online behind you. So you can't, listen, I can't help it. This is, you know, I qualify for all of these chumras. You know, so you're going to tell me I can't keep these chumras? Of course you can keep the chumras. You go to the back of the line, you wait till everyone else is done, and then you keep your chumras. You don't be machmir so everyone else online has to wait for you to finish. Right? And it's like this in a lot of areas, you know. There's a famous maestro, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, one of the bachrim in Torah Vadas, was complaining that the yeshiva didn't serve glatt kosher food. In those days, there was different issues. It wasn't so easy to get glatt kosher food. I'm not talking about like strictly kosher. The food was strictly kosher. It just didn't fulfill the chumrah of the mechaber of glatt, whatever that may be. I don't want to get into it now. But so Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky heard about this and he told the bacher to come to his office. And he said, bring your tefillin. So he brings his tefillin. Rav Yaakov takes a knife. He opens up the guy's tefillin and he looks through some of the things and he says, your tefillin are posel. So he said, Rebbe, I happen to know for a fact that these tefillin were kosher when they were checked, you know, very recently. So he says, no, he points to a din in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Mechaber, that he says that these tefillin are posel. So he says, but Rebbe, doesn't the Ramah say right there that we don't paskin that way, that it's okay, you could be lenient in that area? So the tefillin are kosher according to the Ramah. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said back to him, he says, if you want to be machmir like the Mechaber against the Ramah with my money, I'll be machmir like the Mechaber against the Ramah with your money. So he said, if you want Ashkenazim, they don't have to eat glot. They don't have to. That's a chumrah of the Mechaber. So he says, if you want to be machmir, that the whole yeshiva should have to spend extra money for glot meat, you know, so then I'll also tell you that you should be spending your own money on more machmir tefillin and more chumras of your own money on the Shulchan Aruch whenever the Shulchan Aruch is more machmir than the Ramah. You know, so it's a very important thing to keep in mind. You want to be machmer to eat glad kosher, so I have a very easy solution for you. Don't eat meat in yeshiva. If you're so frum, you'll refrain from eating meat in yeshiva. When you go home, your parents will buy you glad kosher meat, and that's what you'll eat at home. And during the week, you'll eat dairy. I'm saying it's not so pashut that you could always be machmer on others' cheshbonus. You know, there are a lot of people, as we mentioned, don't rely on Erevin. Right, they don't rely on Erevin. I'll tell you right now, there's no such thing as an Erev. Hasn't yet been invented an Erev in this world that's kosher l'chol adeus. There's no such thing. It's a physical impossibility in today's world to build an Erev that everyone would hold as kosher. There's so many nuances and different shittas in Erevin that it makes a lot of sense not to rely on Erevin. That's all I'm saying. It makes a lot of sense not to rely on Erevin. However, if you're a single guy and you don't want to rely on Erevin, so that's only affecting you, right? Unless your parents ask you to do some things. But if you're married and, you know, so listen, somebody's got to bring the baby where the baby needs to get, and somebody has to push the stroller and carry all the things for the kids, so okay, so I'll dump it all on my wife. I'll make sure my wife has to carry all everything, and I'll just, you know, walk on my way, nothing in my pockets, nothing on my back, I'm good, you know? It's not so posh it. You have to... Now, some people's wives are, to them, that's the ultimate hana, that their husband is the biggest machmer on the block. I'm saying, but for many women, it's not so. Many women don't want to have to be schleppers and to carry everything. So you don't necessarily have the right to be machmer on your wife's cheshbon like that. So it's something to keep in mind. Something to keep in mind. Okay, and the last idea I just want to throw out there is there's a Gemara in Gittin. I didn't actually include it on the sheet. It got cut off. But the Gemara in Gittin talks about how much of the get has to be written l'shma. How much of the get has to be written l'shma. So one of the opinions is that every single word of the get has to be written l'shma. You should stand over the person writing the get and make sure that every single word of the get is written for the people who are getting divorced. So that's not the ikur. That's not the ikur opinion. So he says, Asala Kameh de Rav Yossi, the Rami Rav Asi, they brought this question to Rami Rav Asi, Amr Le Lo Tzri, because you don't have to do this, V'chi Tema Ayavid L'chumra, so you'll say, okay, you don't need it, but let me do it anyway, just because there is an opinion out there that says every word has to be L'shma. So it's Nimtza Atamotzi Laz, I'll get in our Rishonim. So you're going to end up having people talk Lashon Hara about the earlier Gittin. When they find out, oh, this Beis Din, they're so from, they make every word be written l'shma. But the earlier generations, they didn't require that every word was written l'shma. They only required certain parts of the getter written l'shma. So you're going to be motzi laz on those individuals. And this is something that we have to keep in mind also, that, you know, Rav Moshe has a tshuva about someone who wants to observe certain chumras during the course of davening. Rav Moshe wants to, you know, so he says that, let's say you want to stand for certain parts of davening, and the Rav of the shul doesn't stand for those parts of davening. And Mikar Adin, you don't have to. So Rav Moshe says, you're not allowed. If the Rav of the Shul is not doing it, and you want to do it, so you're not allowed to be more machmir than the Rav. You're not allowed to show that you're frumer than the Mora Hora of that area. You know, and there are a lot of ways that this plays out. I don't know, something, a personal pet peeve of mine is like, you know, when I see people that live in communities that have Erev in, and again, I'm not saying everybody has to carry in an Erev. I'm just saying that, you see, I see a guy walking through the streets. Every Shabbos, the same thing. He's always wearing his talis. You know, he wears his talis to shul and back every single day, every single Shabbos. So I just like, there's a vada rabbanim of your community. They paskin that this Erev is good. The rabbanim of the community use the Erev. I said it. So you don't want to use the Erev? Kol hakavod, don't use the Erev. But make sure, if you're so frum, make sure that Erev Shabbos, your talis makes its way to shul. And it's there, so you don't have to walk through the streets wearing your talis, demonstrating to all that you don't hold to the Erev. It's not so posh that you're allowed to do that. You know, so I'm saying, if you still, or, you know, whatever. If you have a son who is not, you know, not makpid, make your son carry it. I don't know what. But there are ways to keep these ideas and not to have it fly in the face of the rabbanim of the community, not to have it fly in the face of the previous generations who did not keep these chumras. You know, it's something something very important. So just to summarize again, I don't want to give off the impression that I'm not a big fan of chumras. It's you know, a person wants to go lifnim mishuras hadin and a lot of things. This is something very chashuv. But it's important, you know, it's important, number one, that it shouldn't be a chumra bali de kula, as we gave a lot of examples for that, both in halacha and in hanhaga. Number two, a person has to know the difference between the ikar adin and the chumra, so it shouldn't be a chashash about tosif. And also, one thing I didn't mention, but it's also very important, is that if you don't differentiate in your own mind between chumras and ikar adin, a lot of times you have guys, they get very into chumras, and then they realize they can't keep all these chumras, and when they chuck the chumra, they chuck the ikar adin also. That's something that's also very important to keep in mind. We mentioned it for other observers, but it also works for oneself as well. You have to know, if you can't keep the chumra after a while, okay, you can't keep it. That doesn't mean that all of a sudden the regular halacha has to fall away as well. We gave examples of tznius and chumras. One should try to keep them as private as possible. Person should only take on chumras that make sense to take on. Reading something in a book about a certain Gadol Hador, that person did it, you know, doesn't necessarily mean that it's worthy for you to do it. It has to be real. It has to be something which makes sense for you. Also, not to be machmer on other people's cheshbonos. And last but not least, to be careful to that the chumash should line up with the general accepted psak of the rabbanim of your particular area. Okay, everyone have a good day. Sorry I went late.